Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Chitungwiza municipal workers are continuing with their crippling strike after they failed to reach an agreement with the local authority today over salary arrears backdating to 2013.
The strike is still continuing, and today we're at the labor, and there's nothing really to write about from what we have heard from the labor officer. We had gone there thinking that he shall preside over the conciliation process.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton says Zimbabweans hold the key to their future, and the U.S. stands ready to support them realize their dreams.
Zimbabwe's future is very much in the hands of Zimbabweans. I think that Zimbabwe's own policy decisions are the primary drivers of the future of this country, whether it's the economic future or the social future or the political future.
And the long vacant position of second vice president of Zimbabwe is now becoming a bone of contention within ZANU-PF as party stalwarts position themselves to take over the post.
Why today should we say Simon Kaimo cannot be the next vice president? Why should we say today we are abolishing that position?
Chitungwiza municipal workers are continuing with a crippling strike after they failed to reach an agreement with the local authority today over salary arrears backdating to 2013. The two sides could not reach the agreement before labor officials in Harare, who have been drawn into the salary dispute for arbitration. Chitungwiza workers spokesman Reverend Ephraim Katsina says the employers refused to entertain them, insisting that they must go back to work because their industrial action is illegal. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Chitungwiza Mayor Philip Mutoti and Town Clerk George Makunde as their mobile phones were not being answered. But Reverend Katsina says they will soon be seeking an audience with top government officials in order for them to be heard.
The strike is still continuing, and today we're at the labor, and there's nothing really to write about from what we have heard from the labor officer. We had gone there thinking that he shall preside over the conciliation process, but surprisingly he said he wants to issue a show cause order, which he cannot issue because the show cause order can only be issued by the minister. But in this case, we feel that, and we think that this recommendation to the minister will be on our side. And he said he's going to put his recommendations to the minister on Monday, meaning that the strike will still be on.
There were reports that some workers were threatening management and blocking residents from paying bills. Can you confirm this?
There is no worker who had obstructed anyone from paying rent. But the workers that are there, they are on strike. Only the managers are at work. So to say that the workers were blocking rent payers from paying, it's malicious.
We also understand that the town clerk wanted those in the essential services arrested. He's saying they should have been working. What's your reaction to this?
Chitungwiza Municipality Workers Union, or Zimbabwe Urban Carters Workers Union, doesn't fall under the essential service. Our industry is mainly for service delivery and not for saving lives. And because of that, you cannot declare our industry an essential service industry. It's not an essential service industry. And for him to say that they should be arrested, it's malicious, and I don't think that he is reading the Labour Act well.
We also understand that the police came looking for you. Did they leave any message for you?
No, the police did not leave any message for me, but the people who were there, because I was at Makube building, the people who were there texted me a message and said that the police were looking for me. And I just wonder why they are looking for me.
That was Chitungwiza Workers spokesman Reverend Ephraim Katsina on the phone from offices of the Minister of Labour in Harare.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton says Zimbabweans hold the key to their future and the U.S. stands ready to support them realize their dreams. Our correspondent Ivan Jefera has more details from Harare.
Speaking to editors in Harare today, Ambassador Wharton described Zimbabwe as a country with a lot of potential, but said its economic success will depend on the policies the country will adopt.
And I believe further that Zimbabwe's future is very much in the hands of Zimbabweans. I think that Zimbabwe's own policy decisions are the primary drivers of the future of this country, whether it's the economic future or the social future or the political future. What really matters in Zimbabwe is what the government and the people of Zimbabwe decide to do.
Mr. Wharton said although the U.S. imposed sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his inner circle, the measures could be reviewed in line with the developments that have taken place in Zimbabwe, such as the new constitution and the peaceful elections held last year.
I think the question now is whether they still make sense. I think that accountability matters. I think that values matter. I also think that it's very important for the United States to continue to review and revise those sanctions. Things that were appropriate in 2003 or 2008 may no longer be appropriate today. And to that end, I'd like to point to the fact that, in fact, our sanctions list is reduced, has been reduced. We're now at 106 individuals and 69 entities. I think it can go further in the direction of minimizing the number of people on the list.
Ambassador Wharton pointed out that President Mugabe will not be attending the U.S.-Africa Investment Summit in Washington later this month, as he is still on the targeted sanctions list.
Well, as you know, the deputy chair of SADC is on the specially designated nationals list, the SDN list, targeted sanctions list. And as such, it was the judgment of the White House that it was not appropriate to invite him.
On the political situation in Zimbabwe, Ambassador Wharton said most worrying is the fact that the main political parties in the country are self-consumed in internal politics at the expense of policy issues and are not presenting alternatives to the people of Zimbabwe. He said America is not taking sides in the movement for democratic change squabbles and is not funding any of the factions.
Specifically, we are being extremely careful not to take sides. The same way as in the internal dynamics of ZANU-PF, it is none of our business. You know, the parties have got to work out how they want to move into the future, how they want to handle transition or fracture or whatever it is. So what I do is I try to meet with everybody. But my message, certainly on the MDC side, is the same to everybody. We are not taking sides in this fight. This is up to you guys to figure out how you're going to lead the party or parties.
Former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai is locked in a bitter power struggle with Secretary General Tendai Biti, who wants him out for incompetency and failing to beat Mr. Mugabe in the July 2014 elections. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The long vacant position of second vice president of Zimbabwe is now becoming a bone of contention within ZANU-PF as party stalwarts position themselves to take over despite an unwritten rule that the position is set aside for a ZAPU-PF cadre. It is believed that there are some secret maneuvers by some ZANU-PF bigwigs to fill the vacancy despite the gentleman's agreement that is understood to have been crafted by President Robert Mugabe and then PF ZAPU leader Joshua Nkomo before the signing of the Unity Accord in 1987.
One of those said to be jostling for the position is Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa. According to the state-run Herald newspaper, ZANU-PF chairman Simon Kayamoyo, who is tipped to become the second vice president, yesterday made it clear that the unwritten tenets of the Unity Accord still hold. There is growing concern as to why President Mugabe has not appointed Kayamoyo, and this is said to be playing into the intra-party divisions. However, a former PF ZAPU cadre, Max Mkandla, told Studio 7 he is confident that President Mugabe will appoint Kayamoyo in December when the party holds its Congress.
Joseph Musika was a national chairman during the Nkomo when Joshua Nkomo was a vice president. Same applies with John Nkomo, did the same. That was the protocol, which was actually followed. Why today should we say Simon Kaimo cannot be the next vice president? Why should we say today we are abolishing that position? We can't do that. Let it be so and then continue just like that. There is no ending of it. It has got the beginning, but it doesn't have or indicate any ending of it. There can be a next vice president from anywhere, provided the ZANU-PF dissolve that party and then simply survive on a different banner. Because any other party which will come in will say, no, we are not part and parcel of that unit agreement of December 22. We are not ZANU-PF, we are not TF.
Now, what do you think is the reason that has made the appointment of the next vice president delay?
There is no reason. I suggest and then think that maybe the reason is that when that post is actually announced, there are a lot of people who want to contest that position from PF Zap side. Because there are some people who are saying we are very senior than Simon Kaimo. That is not the position. That is not the position.
That was Maxim Kandla, a former PF ZAP cadre. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kilohertz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
In our second and final exclusive interview with MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai, the opposition leader is admitting that there are some missteps that they made in 2013 that contributed to their shocking loss to ZANU-PF in the elections. The MDC leader also takes a swipe at the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socioeconomic Transformation, or ZIMA set, saying it is doomed to fail. This comes as Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa is expected Tuesday to lead a 20-member interministerial delegation to China, during which he hopes to convince the Chinese to provide financial assistance to fund the government's economic blueprint. Zimbabwe needs $27 billion to fund ZIM asset. Tsvangirai tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that ZIM asset is dead on arrival.
In my statement, I already said that ZIM asset without funding cannot be a panacea to our problems. There is no difference between ZIM asset, ZIM press, all these other programs that have been announced and they've disappeared into the state, into file. For instance, I point out ZIM asset requires $27 billion. We are generating $4 billion worth of budget every year. So how do you get $27 million to fund this program?
What alternative policy do you have?
We do have a JUICE, the program, which is a jobs plan. The jobs plan is a very clear program that will entail reinvestment, increased production, and also employment creation. That's where the thrust should be.
You talked about correcting some policies. Are you talking here about indigenization?
Indigenization was something that was coined by ZANU-PF. We talked about empowering our people. The two are different. Indigenization, where it forces people to give up certain percentages of the value of companies, is destroyed confidence in the economy. Whereas if we had programs of empowerment, we would actually be creating platforms for our people to participate much more meaningfully. So the whole conceptualization of the indigenization policy, even ZANU-PF has admitted, it needs to be reviewed. In the meantime, we have an economy where some of our own indigenous takeovers have actually failed because they've lacked financial backing, they've lacked training, they've lacked any partnership that is going to help the economy. So it's a disaster. Even ZANU-PF accepts that it has been a major failure.
Let's talk about the foreign policy. You also say Zimbabwe is a myopic foreign policy.
Well, first and foremost, our foreign policy should be that we will engage everyone on a win-win situation. What is the best interest of the country? We have a situation in which we have had a look-east policy at the expense of other countries that have been major trading partners for a very long time, created fissures that are totally unnecessary. So our foreign policy must be based on the best interest that we can derive from that relationship.
On the reflections, you seem also to be admitting that there were some things you overlooked on the elections. Is this your Damascus moment?
No. One needs to separate between the participation and the consequence of that participation. As I said in my statement, the rigging was far beyond even our understanding, even Zanu-PF's understanding. This was a highly militarized operation. If it had been the ordinary Zanu-PF shenanigans, we would have dealt with it. But this was beyond us.
Let's talk about the party congress and how do you hope to emerge as a party in October?
The congress is coming at a time when we have had this rebellion. It's coming at a time when there are certain narratives that are being promoted. It's coming at a time when the country is facing its biggest ever crisis. So we are focused. We want this congress to be an issue-based congress, not a position-oriented congress. So this is going to be a congress not based on just elections. Election is just but one of the last agenda items. But fundamentally, we are looking at the organization transformation.
Let's talk just briefly about properties said to be in the hands of the renewal team. How is it affecting the daily activities of your party?
Well, the party is of course, facing very serious financial situation. That's why we have put the burden on our members. We would rather not dwell so much on what property has been taken by who. We have had this experience before in 2005, a much worse situation than we are facing now. So we will emerge because our people support us. And those who are committed to democratic struggle know that the so-called renewal agenda has nothing to do with fighting Mugabe or fighting Zanu-PF. So we will not put much attention to that. Whether they have one vehicle or one office, what does it matter to the struggle challenge that we face as a party?
That was MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Tomorrow, Studio 7 will be talking to opposition National Constitutional Assembly leader Professor Love Muamaduku.
National dialogue is something that is always important, but I don't think it is the time to say, let's talk and get an inclusive arrangement where people in opposition then join the government, because that has happened before. So I would not support that approach at the moment. What I would believe is important for political opposition is to keep putting across those ideas that they think would work. Just make them public. What economic policies would you suggest? Just put them public and ask that government either to pick those programs or not pick them, while preparing for a situation where we get to the next election that will bring a government which is not the ZANU-PF government.
Don't miss this interview here on Studio 7 tomorrow.
You talked, we listened. By popular demand, Studio 7 Live Talk is launching our very own Women's Round Table starting Thursday, July 16. This show seeks to address issues of concern to us as women. Tell us what you want us to discuss via email at studio7@voanews.com. The address again, studio7@voanews.com, or on WhatsApp 1-202-465-0318. The number again, 1-202-465-0318. And of course, on our Studio 7 Facebook page.
Coming up,
police in Brazil arrest a top official with a hospitality company allegedly involved in the illegal selling of World Cup tickets. Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Abdullah Abdullah is claiming victory in Afghanistan's presidential election despite preliminary results that show him trailing Ashraf Ghani by a million votes. The vote count so far is Abdullah with 43.5% of the votes cast in the June 14 runoff election against Ghani's 56.4%.
Israel launched dozens of air raids on the Gaza Strip overnight Tuesday as it edged closer to a ground invasion to halt Palestinian rocket attacks on Israel.
And the defense for South African runner Oscar Pistorius has rested its case in his murder trial, leaving only closing arguments before the judge decides his fate.
Congestion at the Bedbridge border post continued to persist today, with most commercial cargo stuck at the border since last Friday, and truckers and agents are blaming the delays on the Zimbabwe Revenue Authority, or ZIMRA. ZIMRA is reportedly dispatched a team from its loss and control department to investigate the development, which has also resulted in processing trucks from the South African side of the border into Zimbabwe. Phumula legislator and member of the Parliament's Transport Portfolio Committee, Albert Mhlanga, tells VOA reporter Standekile Mhlanga the problem at the border post could also be a result of corruption by some government officials.
What we have looked at the border congestion, one, we've noted that our systems and our procedures actually are the one causing that congestion. And the second thing is corruption, what is happening at the border there. People don't want to declare or pay Zimbra people. As a result, when they want actually to do shortcuts, they actually come maybe at the same time and also wanted to be saved at the same time. It will take us long time to deal with the corruption, because corruption starts from the chief guys, the big guys, until to a little guy who can enable a person to cross with goods from either South Africa or Zimbabwe, until to the chief guys, especially our Zimbra guys. I'm sure we will have to make a workshop to train them. Maybe increase their pay. Most of the people are fighting different wars. If we actually get together and actually close and move together, then starting redoing this for the benefit of every Zimbabwean. But for now, I tell you, it will be a waste of time just to say, we'll do this, we'll do this. If we together get our brains together as government, then maybe we can start actually training our workforce.
That was Albert Mhlanga, Phumula legislator and member of the Parliament's Transport Portfolio Committee, on the line from Bulawayo.
A University of Zimbabwe economics student who was arrested last week on charges of trying to commit acts of insurgence, terrorism, banditry and sabotage was released on bail today by the High Court. 20-year-old Romeo Msemburi was freed on $100 bail by Justice Joseph Musakwa, who ordered him to reside at his current address until his case is finalized. Prosecutors allege that Msemburi sent the controversial Facebook phantom character Baba Jukwa an email asking for arms of war to rebel against the government. He is the third suspect to be arrested over the Baba Jukwa saga after Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai and his brother Philip. The two were both bailed by the same court last week. Musemburi's lawyer, Tonderai Batasara, explains to Ntungameli Nkomo more about what transpired in court today.
You remember on Friday last week, we filed our application for bail, in which basically we were contending that the accused is a proper candidate for bail for several reasons that we cited in our rather lengthy application for bail. When the National Prosecuting Authority received the application for bail, they considered it long and hard. And yesterday in the afternoon, we were served with the response by the state. In its response, the state basically agreed with what we had indicated in our papers and considered that our client was entitled to bail. And today, the High Court granted the accused bail on the conditions that we had suggested in our application for bail. That is to say that he be granted to bail on condition that he pays $100 bail deposit. He reports once every Friday at CID Law and Order Harare Central Police Station between the hours of 6 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the evening, and that he resides at the address that he gave to the police that is on the court record, and that he does not interfere with investigations or evidence against him.
Lawyer Tonderai Batasara for University of Zimbabwe student Romeo Msemburi.
The launch last week of A1 farmers' permits by President Robert Mugabe has raised questions about the capacity of government and banks to offer any loans to thousands of new land permit holders. Critics say these farmers do not have the capacity to repay loans they may source from banks. For Perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Professor Ngoni Chibishe, a former Stanbic bank credit manager. Professor Chibishe says the answer is simply a big no.
You see, they can't be taken as collateral security. Why? Because in the event that the farmer defaults, the bank has got no right to take the property, the land, and sell it to somebody who will pay the bank the money that the A1 owner will have defaulted. So definitely those are not bankable. And also, I don't see any way in which they can actually motivate the farmer to be productive on that particular lane. I think they should look elsewhere. As if they are thinking that those are A1 permits are bankable, definitely the answer is a big no. And definitely that will be proved very, very shortly.
Looking at the issue of repayments of the loans, if the banks were indeed able to give loans, do you think that these farmers would be able to repay them in a timely fashion?
No, well, maybe a few, well, those that have been getting loans from the banks, they will be able to pay, especially the tobacco farmers.
That was Professor Ngoni Chibishe, a former Stanbic bank credit manager, speaking with Studio 7. Put your flags up in the sky.
A top official with the hospitality company involved with the World Cup has been arrested in Brazil in connection with an investigation into the illegal reselling of tickets to the tournament. Ray Welland, the director of match services, was detained Monday at the Copacabana Palace Hotel in Rio de Janeiro Monday. Match Services' subsidiary company, Match Hospitality, provides hospitality services to corporate interests at the World Cup, including complimentary tickets to various matches. Prosecutors say Welland's name came up repeatedly in thousands of wiretapped telephone conversations that led to the arrest of 11 other people accused of taking part in the scheme.
Lamine Fofana, the head of a U.S.-based sports marketing company, was among those arrested. Police say the scalping ring had made up to $450,000 per game by reselling the complimentary tickets. Welland is facing at least 4 years in prison if he's found guilty. Meanwhile, Brazil clash with Germany in a semi-final match. The winner will clash with either the Netherlands or Argentina in the finals. Our reporter Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye speaks with soccer fan Fabian Mahembe about this match and other issues related to the World Cup.
In the match that is going to be played tonight, Germany versus Brazil, there's going to be a big disappointment if you look at the two teams, because Brazil being the host of this cup, we naturally would want them to proceed to the final so that the tournament doesn't lose its glitter. But when we see the way the Germans have been playing, we are seeing that the Germans have been playing very good soccer, and on paper, they've got that advantage. They can actually win this match because Brazil are also missing Neymar, who was injured in their last match. So this is going to be a 50-50 match, but the home team should win when we look at the home advantage.
How are you as soccer fans able to watch these matches in areas where there is no electricity?
The problem of electricity is there. We are living with it, but as soccer fans, we are just going to the sports clubs dotted around the country, dotted around the cities, where the owners of these games have managed to put in place some generators which will enable the games to be screened live. This has gone very well with our spouses, with the supporter spouses, because normally they would want their men to be home. But if you look at the stage of this World Cup, the World Cup fever is with us. We just have to go out there and share these matches. With the count of the electricity shortage, people are going to watch these matches in the night spots, where at times it's very pleasant.
That was soccer fan Fabian Mahembe speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Harare.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will be talking with listeners and experts about moves by Zimbabwe to issue title deeds to new farmers so they can access bank loans.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Chitungwiza municipal workers are continuing with a crippling strike after they failed to reach an agreement with the local authority today over salary arrears backdating to 2013.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton says Zimbabweans hold the key to their future.